Hello, welcome to Literally from the North Shore, and thanks for tuning in. Today we continue with KTWH volunteer Beth Alexander's reading of Minnesota author Dennis Hirschbach's book, A River Through Two Harbors. This book chronicles fictional North Shore law enforcement officer Deidre Johnson, who uncovers a crime ring that is trafficking Native girls to the harbor in Duluth. This book contains mature themes and may not be appropriate for all listeners. We pick up where Beth left off last time.
Chapter 21. Deidre felt at peace like she hadn't in a long time. The idea that she had done her job had brought evidence to the FBI, who were far more capable of raising the manpower to tackle the complex problem, had turned over the case to them. All of that lifted a huge burden from her shoulders. She no longer felt isolated and alone. For the first time in ages, she thought she could get back to her old way of life. At 10 o'clock, she met Zach Burton in his office. Together, they walked to the conference room down the hall. She was surprised that only a half dozen men and women were waiting for them, expecting a much larger group. "Folks, this is Deidre Johnson, the person who brought in the evidence we've been searching for." To her surprise, they stood and gave her a brisk round of applause. One of the women offered her a cup of coffee and invited her to take a seat. Deidre felt a little like a reluctant celebrity. Zach took his place to the side of a projection screen in front of the room. He began a PowerPoint presentation. "This is a photo of the Ishat the last time it was in port the summer before last. Notice that there are two gangways, one fore and one aft. Our intent is to cover both of them when our operation begins. I checked with Port Authority. Its ETA is December 10 at approximately 6 a.m. Of course, that's highly variable at this time. We'll update the information when the ship clears the Sioux locks and as it makes its way down the lake." Deidre had not thought much about the snippet of conversation she had overheard when she took a wrong turn after visiting with Zach. Even so, she felt a relaxation of her muscles when she learned he had been speaking to Port Authority. "It'll be docking at Grain Elevator 9 on the Duluth side of the harbor to take on a load of wheat bound for the Balkans. It's expected to be in port only a day and a half, departing at 6 p.m. on the 11th. They'll be pushing to get out of port as quickly as they can, because the weather is so unpredictable this time of year. We're going to stake out the pier from the time its mooring lines are cast ashore until they are hauled in. Here's the plan." Zach put the next frame up on the screen, a diagram showing the probable location of the ship, the location of warehouses, the grain silos, and the location of each member of the team. "There'll be two teams, four people positioned inside of the aft gangway, and the others near the fore gangway. Each team will have a leader, and will be linked by a secure line of communication. That way, no one can distract us while they enter the opposite end of the ship." Deidre looked around the room. Along with Zach, she counted seven people, yet on the screen the diagram showed eight. She thought someone must be missing. She was jolted from her thoughts when Zach said, "Deidre, I assumed you'd want to be with us. I've included you among the four watching this location." He pointed at the fore of the ship. "I hope I didn't take unwarranted liberty in assuming this." Her peace was shattered. Suddenly, she was thrust into the middle of what she thought she would be avoiding. So she wouldn't stutter or seem too surprised, Deidre nodded. "Good. I couldn't imagine you'd have wanted to miss the excitement. We'll get together on Monday the 9th to prepare." The meeting broke up, each agent returning to whatever work they were assigned. On the way out, Zach said to Deidre, "Be sure to bring your body armor. We don't know what we'll be up against." "Thanks a lot," Deidre thought, but she smiled. The way to Ben's house was becoming second nature, and she gave the turns no thought. In minutes from leaving the meeting at the Federal Building, she was pulling into his driveway. A Christmas tree was propped against the garage, an 8-foot balsam fir. Deidre bent over and inhaled its aromatic vapors. She could imagine the smell it would produce in his house. The realization hit her that she had never experienced Christmas with children, or as a child, for that matter. All she remembered was her drunken stepfather ruining everything. She remembered the Christmas Eve he came home drunk and threw the tree out the door, decorations and all. After that, her mother never tried to celebrate the season. She and John had talked about what it would have been like to have their own children, and she wondered then what kind of mother she would make. She hoped she could give Ben's daughters the kind of Christmas they deserved. As she walked past the picture window facing the street, she peeked inside the house. Megan and Marin were playing with their dolls, and when Deidre tapped on the window, they sprang to their feet. By the time she made it to the door, they were waiting for her, their arms outstretched to receive a hug. They showered Deidre with kisses on her cheeks. "Daddy will be home from work soon. Can we play dollies until he gets here?"
"We sure can. First, let me get my coat off and get comfortable. Then we'll play."
The sitter had stood by while the girls fawned over Deidre. "They certainly love you. Whatever I do, they tell how you do it differently." She smiled a warm smile, and Deidre knew she wasn't bothered by being one-upped. "I'd better be going. My husband will be needing supper when he gets home. He's retiring this spring, and we've made a deal. He promised to do the cooking and give me a break from meal preparation when that time comes." As she was leaving, Ben came up the walk, supper in hand, and ready to put in the oven. Tonight they were having gourmet ready-to-bake sausage pizza. Deidre thought this was about as good as it got. She sat down on the floor and held a doll while Ben set the table and poured milk for the girls. After supper, she helped clean up, put the dishes in the washer, and wiped off the countertop. Then, after playing another game of Old Maid, she helped tuck Megan and Marin into bed. As Deidre pulled the quilt up around her shoulders, Marin reached up and wrapped her arms around Deidre's neck. "I love you," she said, and kissed her cheek. Tears formed in Deidre's eyes as she said goodnight. As she and Ben enjoyed some quiet time, they shared what was left of a bottle of wine. "I don't think the girls remember Jenny," he said, sadness in his voice. "Once in a while they talk about their mother, but their conversations are almost always about heaven, where their mommy is." He held his glass up, almost like a toast. "You have no idea how we appreciate you being part of our lives. They have more awareness of you than they have of Jenny. She was special, but they were so little when she died." Ben swirled the wine in his goblet and stared at it as it stopped rotating. "I worry about them sometimes. We don't seem to be making any progress in cutting out the cancers in our society, and I wonder what lies ahead for them. By the way, how was your meeting with Zach? He told me you were in the building today." Deidre briefly outlined the plans Zach had in the works. "Did he tell you he wants me to be a part of the team when they stake out the ship?" Ben's eyes widened. "No, he didn't say a word about that. That's highly unusual, you know. Zach's a good man, and he tackles every case like it's a personal vendetta. He must see something that makes him believe you'll be an asset. Otherwise, he'd never ask you to come along. But Deidre, be careful. The twins can't absorb another loss in their lives. Promise?" "Promise," she said. By Saturday evening, the excitement had built to the point the two girls could hardly be still. Supper had been an early affair. During the mid-afternoon, Ben brought the tree in from outside and placed it in its stand. It stood in its allotted corner, emitting the smells of Christmas as it thawed in preparation to being decorated. At 5:30, Ben announced it was time, and the girls cheered. He put a CD into its player, and the voices of Christmas carolers filled the background. Everyone stood back, offering advice, as Ben strung the lights on the tree, burying some deep near its core and stringing others near the tips of the branches. He showed the girls how to pull the corners of their eyes to form an exaggerated squint.
"It makes the lights all streaky," Megan exclaimed, and she and sister kept pulling their lids until Ben said, "Enough, your eyes will stay that way."
Deidre boxed him on the shoulder. "Don't scare them like that." Then she tried to give a better reason. "If you squint like that, you can't see as well, and you might stumble over a box." Somehow, she thought, Ben's threat had a greater effect. After an hour of working together, Ben stood on a step stool and placed an angel at the top of the tree. They stood back to admire the adornments. Not intending to do so, Ben and Deidre said at the same time, "I think this is the best tree ever." They looked at each other and laughed out loud. "Sit over here and close your eyes," Megan instructed the two adults. Deidre heard them rummaging in some wrapping paper and then heard the sound of the step stool being dragged across the floor. Amid whispers and giggles, she heard them struggling to accomplish some sort of task. "Don't open your eyes, but stand up," Marin directed. Each child took one of the adult's hands. "We're going to spin you around, but don't open your eyes." The girls led the way, and Deidre felt small hands positioning her. "You can open your eyes now." Deidre was surprised to find herself no more than a foot from Ben, facing him.
Ben looked puzzled as well. Look up. They did.
That's mistletoe. Grandma gave it to us last year. She said whoever stands under it has to be kissed.
Ben and Deirdre looked at each other. Well? The girls asked in unison. Ben laughed nervously, and Deirdre blushed her usual shade of red. He placed his arms around her, careful not to be too aggressive, and she stood on her tiptoes. For an instant they kissed, and then Ben backed away.
Megan and Maren stood back, their hands covering their mouths and giggling like Deirdre had never heard them giggle.
Was that what you meant? He asked.
They were speechless, still covering their mouths as though they held an important secret.
Ben grabbed them and nibbled at the nape of their necks. I love you so much I could eat you up.
They clung to his shoulders as he carried them to bed. It had become a pattern for Deirdre and Ben to have a glass of wine and visit after the girls were in bed. They talked about many things that evening, their fears and worries, what Deirdre planned to do after her job was done, what her plans were for Christmas. Ben told her he really would like her to spend it with him and the twins, although he had to admit his parents were celebrating with him. They had a good laugh about how his mother had reacted to Deirdre being invited to Thanksgiving. About 11 o'clock, they decided they better retire for the night, and Ben went to the kitchen. Deirdre heard him rinsing out the glasses. She stood in the doorway, and when he turned to come back into the living room, he almost bumped into her. Deirdre put her arms around his neck, stood on her toes as she had done before, and kissed him on his lips. She felt his arms encircle her and pull her toward him, and they held that pose for many seconds. Finally, Deirdre pushed away.
I'm sorry, Ben, forgive me. She rushed up the stairs and closed the door to her room, fell on the bed and wept, being thankful she didn't have to explain why she was crying. She had no answer herself.
Deirdre was up early the next morning and was eating a piece of toast and drinking a cup of coffee when Ben came down the stairs.
I thought I'd better get an early start, Deirdre explained. Pete needs to go for a good walk, and I have to get things together for Tuesday. She had a difficult time looking at Ben's face for fear of what she'd see.
Before he could respond, Deirdre was at the door, pulling on her jacket. Ben took her hand.
First of all, there's no need to be sorry.
Second, thank you.
And third, I know you're meeting at the Fed on Monday and then have to be back early Tuesday morning. I'd like you to stay here Monday night, if you will. Bring Pete. The girls will have fun playing with him, and we can take him for a walk in the evening. Will you?
Deirdre reached up again and kissed his cheek.
Yes. And she ran to her car.
Chapter 22. The sky on Monday morning looked ominous, and Deirdre felt chilled as she took the scenic highway to Duluth. She had plenty of time. Zach had called the meeting for 2 that afternoon, and until then, she had little to do. She pulled into one of the many spots overlooking Lake Superior and sat in her SUV, allowing its engine to idle. The thermometer on the dash registered an outdoor temperature of 10 degrees, not dangerously cold, but nevertheless bitter, considering the wind chill factor. She watched the streamers of steam rise, evidence of warmer water interfacing with colder air. In the distance, steel blue clouds lay in windrows over the horizon, giving the lake an icy gray color rather than blue. Normally, this was a time of year Deirdre liked above all others. For some reason, the way the shades of gray held contrast to the water intrigued her, made her feel comfortable. She wondered if that was because it was part of nature's rhythms, a predictable cycle providing her an anchor in a continually shifting world. She decided the lake was nurturing. Her thoughts turned to the weekend. Did I make a fool of myself? She wondered. What came over me? I've never behaved like that. Finally, Deirdre convinced herself that her kiss given to Ben was more a reaction to being with his girls than anything else. They made her feel as though she were family, and she wanted them to be happy. Perhaps that's why she put her arms around Ben's neck. It wasn't about him, it was about them. After 20 minutes of rationalizing, she looked at her watch, 1:30, only half an hour before the meeting. She put the shift lever in reverse and backed out of the space. Almost everyone was present when she walked into the meeting room. Zach was in front, pacing, and he held the control for his PowerPoint presentation in his hand as if it were a weapon. Seeing that almost everyone else had a cup in hand, she poured herself coffee and took a seat. The same woman who sat next to her at the last meeting plunked down beside her.
Well, here we go, was all she said. Zack cleared his throat and everyone became attentive. You may have noticed there are two ships anchored outside the harbor, waiting to dock. One of them is the Ishat. It arrived last night at midnight and will pass under the lift bridge at 5 Tuesday morning. We estimate she'll be docked at the Orton Grain Elevator by 6, and loading will begin immediately. You know we're expecting two females to be smuggled aboard sometime during its stay. We haven't a clue when. But you know as well as I do, most clandestine operations take place when it's dark. Prime times would be from 6 p.m. when it ties up to 7:30 a.m., and from 4:30 p.m. to 7:30 a.m. the next day. The ship is scheduled to leave at 6 p.m. on the 11th. That means another window will be open from 4:30 p.m. Wednesday until they pull away from the pier. If I had to put my money down, I'd bet on the last window. There's always a hubbub at the last minute, and my gut feeling is that would be the opportune time to get someone aboard. Unfortunately, that's only a guess. Wear warm clothing, layer it. Thermal underwear, sweaters, your parka. Be sure to wear packs on your feet and well-insulated mittens for your hands. Stocking caps will be mandatory. All of this is agency issue. Deidre will see that you're equipped. Do not wear parkas with the FBI logo, but underneath have your vest with the initials front and back. At the last minute, throw the parka off and identify yourself as FBI. Deidre, I assume your vest is labeled BCA. She nodded. Her insides were in knots as she drove to Ben's, not so much because of tomorrow's action, but more so because she knew seeing Ben was going to be awkward. She hesitated getting out of her car. Then she squared her shoulders and walked to the door to receive her usual welcome from the girls. They mobbed her. Ben stood in the background, grinning from ear to ear. "Good to have you here again, Deidre." And he gave her a quick kiss on the cheek. Deidre looked at the girls. They were beaming. "Do you like Daddy?" Megan asked, her eyes searching Deidre's face. "Yes, I like your daddy." She looked at Ben, and he winked at her. "Not too awkward after all," she thought. "Come look at the tree," Marin asked as she pulled Deidre to the masterpiece they had created on Saturday. Hanging from strings were four paper dolls, gaudily colored the way an almost five-year-old would. "This is me," she pointed to one of the small figures. "And this is Megan," she pointed at the other paper doll. "And this is you, and this is Daddy." Deidre fought back the tears. The paper dolls were arranged in order from the man doll to the woman doll to the two children. The girls had taped them together in order. "Daddy, Mommy, Megan, and Marin," they had written in crooked letters on each doll. "It's a family," she thought, but didn't verbalize the words. She wouldn't allow herself to imagine such a scenario. After the nightly ritual of baths and hairbrushing, the girls were tucked in for the night. On the way down the stairs, Ben asked, "Wine?" "Sure, but make mine a short one. I've got a big day ahead of me tomorrow." She sat on the sofa while Ben opened a fresh bottle and poured the Clos du Bois. He handed her the glass and took a seat in the chair across from her. "Can you tell me what you expect to happen tomorrow?" "I know it's going to be cold," she laughed nervously, almost afraid to be alone with him. "Seriously, we're beginning a stakeout tomorrow that may last as long as 18 hours. Zack says there'll be a place nearby where we can get warm, and we're going to take shifts being in the cold. He thinks he has it arranged so we look like workers, and our rotation will look as if we're a team trading off warming ourselves. I guess we are, but it's going to take an acting job to convince anyone we should be there. If and when it looks as though someone is being smuggled aboard, whoever is on outside duty will be closer to the action and can lead the charge. From there, we have to react to the circumstance." "Are you worried?" Ben asked, his brow furrowing so his eyebrows almost met.
"Worried?
No, I'm scared to death," Deidre admitted, and took a sip of wine. Ben got out of his chair and slid next to her on the sofa. He wrapped his arms around her, and she slumped so her head rested on his shoulder. They sat that way for a long time, and Deidre felt safe. "Don't take any foolish chances," Ben said softly. "The girls couldn't live without you." He hesitated. "And I'm beginning to think I can't either." Deidre finally moved. "I wish I could sit here all night, but I have to get some sleep." She took her empty wine glass to the kitchen and stepped onto the first step of the stairs leading to the bedrooms. Then she turned. Standing in that way, she was almost his height, and she put her arms around his neck, kissed him on the forehead, and said, "Good night, Ben." Together they made their way to the top of the stairs. In her room alone, Deidre prepared for bed, brushing her teeth and washing her face. She seldom wore makeup, especially when she was working, so it didn't take much time to clean up. She peeled back the comforter on the bed and crawled under it, clutched an extra pillow to her chest, and curled around it. She fell asleep almost as soon as her head hit the pillow, a slight smile on her face. Chapter 23. As the weatherman had promised, Tuesday, December 10th was clear and cold, with the morning temperature bottoming out at 2 degrees above zero. Deidre made her way downstairs before anyone else was awake. Between what Ben had said to her last night and what lay ahead, she couldn't sleep any longer. She picked up the daily paper from the outdoor steps, made a cup of coffee, and placed a sliced bagel in the toaster. She had just settled into a kitchen chair when she heard Ben coming down the stairs. "Good morning," he said, bent down and kissed her cheek, and poured himself a cup of coffee. He separated the sports page from the rest of the paper and began reading. "Look at this. The editorial writers are after the Vikings coach again. Why don't they ever go after management for not giving him any players?" He shook his head. Deidre laughed. If only that was the biggest problem in the world today. She felt comfortable. They fixed breakfast for the girls, and the sitter arrived, which caused Deidre to feel a little uncomfortable, even though nothing was happening between her and Ben. They both left in their own vehicles, heading to the same building. They parked side by side in the lot, and as they walked to their jobs, Ben said, "Be careful, please." Deidre squeezed his hand. She was directed by the receptionist to report to the staging area in the lower level of the building, where she met Zach and a few others of the team. Deidre was beginning to feel butterflies in her stomach, and the reality of what was going to happen began to sink in. As the rest of the team straggled in, a few cracked jokes, but most of them were dead serious. Deidre found a stack of clothes she was to wear. Agency-issued sweaters, boots, even long underwear. She and the two other women suited up in the next room. Then Zach asked them to take a seat. "We've got things set up on the dock where the Ishat will be moored. The Port Authority has been extremely helpful by giving us information about the site. The dock workers know nothing of our sting, but the location of the loading chutes of the grain elevators pretty much dictates where the ship must be berthed. It'll be docked in the right spot, give or take a couple of feet. You've seen those tents that electrical and phone line workers use on cold, windy days? We have one of those set up opposite where each gangway will meet the dock. We'll be playing the part of workers doing repair work. The colder it is, the better to convince people of the need for the shelters. Inside each is a closed-circuit camera that will transmit real-time images to our post inside the building behind the shelters. Those of us inside will monitor what's happening on the dock." Zach handed out a schedule. "Here are the times you'll be in the shelter. They are blocked off in 20-minute shifts. That will be about how long you can stand the cold without becoming too uncomfortable. Wait inside the shelter until your replacement scratches on the canvas. When you come out, don't be afraid to gab a little bit as though you are friends making a switch. Then come inside the warm building. We'll have coffee and other hot drinks around the clock, plus food. It won't be gourmet, but it'll keep you going in the cold. Speaking of which, there are toilets inside." Everyone gave a nervous laugh. "Any questions?" One man raised his hand. "Do we have any way of knowing how the exchange will be made? And when we're sure it's happening, how are we going to respond?" "Thanks, Jim. In my mind, I thought I had covered that, but I guess I wasn't clear at all." Several members of the team shook their heads. "We have no idea what to expect. There is room for a car to be driven onto the pier. Or we could see them escorting the women as they walk toward the ship. They might even be transported with a forklift and in a container. We just have to not become fixated on what we think it'll look like. As to your second question, I'll give the signal to move. We'll be in teams of four, separated by a couple hundred feet between the two gangways. That means one team or another will be in action before the other can respond. The safety of the girls who will be under duress is paramount. One member of each unit will be equipped with a high-powered rifle to cover the scene. I'd be extremely surprised if our perpetrators aren't armed, so have your weapons drawn and ready to fire. We know the fate of the girls who are trafficked, and the traffickers have no scruples. They won't hesitate to shoot to save their own skins. When we get to our post, we'll run through possible scenarios, but by all means, we can't develop a mindset as to how this is going to happen. Whatever we plan will probably be wrong." The team drove to the site, singly or two to a vehicle, and they arrived at odd intervals until everyone was inside a small shack that was dwarfed by the towering grain silos behind it. Almost a block down the pier was a building similar to the one in which they gathered. Zach instructed four members of the team to make their way to that site. The woman in the group was the leader. Zach stayed with Deidre's group. He sent one of the men out for the first shift in the shelter. It'd be over 2 hours before the ship docked, but he wanted it to look as though the utility company had been working on a problem for most of the afternoon. 20 minutes later, another agent was sent out. The man who had spent time in the shelter joined them, poured himself a cup of steaming coffee, and said, "This is the easiest stakeout I've ever been on. The sun shining on the canvas is absorbed, and the greenhouse effect inside is unbelievable. I almost fell asleep, it got so warm. Took off my parka so I'd stay awake." He slurped the hot coffee. Zach chuckled. "I hope you remember that when you're on a shift just before dawn. The forecast is for zero by morning, and the sun won't be shining. Enjoy it while you can." Next, it was Deidre's turn. As Zach had requested, she spent a couple of minutes chatting with the person she was relieving. Then she playfully punched his arm and crawled inside the shelter. There were no wires to fix, only a camera mounted on a tripod and placed against a barely visible hole in the canvas. From her vantage point, she could peer through a small opening. Best of all, she could hear what was happening outside, even the conversations of the workers. She had heard foul language before and was no prude, but during her shift, she heard words used in ways she'd never encountered. Deidre decided she wouldn't want to be in this part of town alone at night. Her predecessor was right. The shelter was almost too warm, and when she heard someone scrape the back door, she didn't feel the need to go outside to be warmed. The shortest daylight period occurs on December 21st in the Northland, and the sun set at around 4:30. By the time 5:30 came, the temperature had dropped, so the team members were more than ready to be spelled after 20 minutes. Each had served five rotations in the shelter, and it was Deidre's turn again. She had just made herself comfortable when in the distance she heard the deep baritone pitch of a ship's horn. Seconds later, the lift bridge operator responded with several high-pitched signals. The ship was preparing to enter the harbor. She couldn't see the canal from where she sat, but she could picture the ship entering between the concrete abutments with only a few feet to spare on either side. Deidre knew that, because it was a foreign ship, a U.S. pilot was on board, guiding the vessel to its berth. It took until the end of her shift for the lights of the ship to come into her field of vision, and she watched it glide into position in front of where she was hidden. She was so intent on the process that she jumped in surprise when the person relieving her gave the signal. Deidre exited the shelter, and the two of them stood for a few seconds, watching the activity. Mooring lines were heaved onto the pier and secured to the pilings. The engines of the ship became almost silent as the captain ordered the boilers to be damped. Inside the warm warehouse, she realized how chilled she had become, and she shivered while gulping a cup of steaming coffee. She was going to have to catch some sleep between shifts as best she could, but right now she wasn't concerned about the caffeine keeping her awake.
You've been listening to episode 12 of A River Through Two Harbors by Minnesota author Dennis Hirschbach. There will be a total of 20 episodes in this reading, so be sure to tune in next time for more from A River Through Two Harbors. If you miss an episode, you can find it on our website, ktwh.org, by clicking on Programs and then Literally from the North Shore on the drop-down list. Each weekend, we'll post the episodes for you to catch up on. To learn more about human trafficking in Minnesota, go to www.yourcallmn.org. Please join us again next time for A River Through Two Harbors, here on Literally from the North Shore.